This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on August 27, 2009. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning. We'll now convene the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, August 27th, 2009. On behalf of the commission, I'd like to make this statement in connection with the recent loss of Senator Kennedy. This morning, I would like to take special note on behalf of the commission of the loss of Senator Kennedy, who passed away 2 days ago. Regardless of our personal political views, we recognize the tireless, valiant effort and dedication of Senator Kennedy to the causes he believed were in the best interest of our country and its citizens. And he fought fiercely in a friendly and civil way, never losing his sense of humor, to realize those ideals through his work as a U.S. Senator. For those of us who have chosen to spend part of our lives serving our country as federal employees, and in the hope that in the overall scheme of things we might make a difference, however small, we acknowledge that he truly made a great difference in his professional lifetime as a U.S. Senator. On behalf of all of us, we extend our sympathy to his family and give recognition to his valuable and dedicated service to our country. Mr. Chairman, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we approve the minutes for Tuesday, July 28, 2009, as set forth in agenda document number 09-56.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Our first matter is Draft Advisory Opinion 2009-14, and the alternate draft, Mercedes-Benz USA LLC, a Sterling Truck Corporation. Council, would you like to begin? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning to the commissioners. We're here to continue discussion of agenda documents 0954 and 0954A, as amended by agenda document 0954B, which responds to a request for advisory opinion filed on behalf of Mercedes-Benz USA LLC and Sterling Truck Corporation. These documents were originally presented at the Commission's July 28th open meeting, but were held over until today to allow for additional public comment on the issues implicated by the requests and the Commission's proposed responses to it. By way of reminder, the request raises questions related to the establishment, administration, and financing of an SSF. The alternative drafts diverge on whether payment of the proposed SSF's administrative costs may be paid out of MBUSA's EAPP cost center. During the three-week extended comment period, the Commission received one additional comment, which came from the requesters and which I'd be happy to answer questions about. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other comments from other commissioners, questions of the council? Who would like to proceed? I would like to make a motion. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Since we discussed this at some length last time, I don't have a lot other to add other than to say that I support agenda document number 09-54, which would approve the request that was submitted by Mercedes-Benz USA, and I'd be happy to make a motion to that we approve that document.
Any debate, discussion? Commissioner Barrowland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will not be able to support the motion as for the reasons that I laid out at the last open session. I continue to support the alternative draft. But I do note that with respect to three of the four questions asked by the requester, there appears to be consensus. So we'll hopefully be able to answer as much as we can.
Further questions? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, will be unable to support the motion. I think there might have been some hope on some person's part that some further information might come to light to sway me in the intervening period. But I have, having reviewed counsel's supplementary comment, I think I understand what he's saying. It's the same thing he said before. I just disagree with it. So I'm pretty much in the same place that I was last time.
Any further comment? Let me mention my thoughts on it, too. I was curious about having a little more information about the structure, and I thank Mr. Barron very much for what he did and really for the very candid way in which this was presented to all of us. It was quite straightforward and helpful, even though in some cases it may not appear helpful to getting you the opinion that you wanted. I have a couple of issues that, for me, I can't get over. Here we have the German company who's Daimler AG. And as I go through the material that we have, the subsidiary that exists for that Daimler or DNAC is bypassed in nearly all of the transactions, if not all of the transactions that are occurring in this case. In other words, Daimler AG, the German company, bypasses the parent and bypasses its own subsidiary, its only subsidiary. There's only one subsidiary that it has, bypasses it, and then goes on to what you can call the grandson or daughter, but it's a subsidiary of the only subsidiary, which is Mercedes-Benz. That's 100% owned by the true only subsidiary in this transaction, and it bills directly to the German company, bypassing its parent. The German company bypasses its only subsidiary and gives what I still see to be a subsidy, and I know we worked with the vernacular on how it could be called, but that's really what it amounts to its only American company. Then we have a situation where two other corporations down the road, a subsidiary of the only American subsidiary, namely DTNA, Daimler Trucks, has another subsidiary, Sterling, which will benefit by having, it's really not a sister, as I call it, it's an aunt in this particular case, which is Mercedes-Benz, by subsidizing their administrative costs for the SSF. So in all instances, it does appear that the German company is making a direct subsidy to some entity other than its only subsidiary. From what I understand, the parents, or the members of the board of directors of Mercedes and Daimler and DNAC still remain foreign nationals, and I believe that's to be the case with Sterling Trucks, the nephew involved here, and Mercedes-Benz. And to my knowledge, I understand that the board of Sterling still is foreign nationals, except that there will be a treasurer in the SSF, and the people on the SSF itself will be American citizens. So it isn't Mercedes-Benz here. I'm looking at the prospect of having to be faced with these kind of structures in the future, where you basically have a foreign company who is not bypassing its own subsidiary and is subsidizing SSF administrative costs with one of its subsidiaries to pay for another one. And I think that that is not within the purview of the comments that were cited to us by the people who were speaking of how McCain-Feingold and Bicker would not interfere with the U.S. subsidiary. I think that... and I take that to heart. But typically what happens in a case like this, absent the structure, is if you have a German company and it deals with its own subsidiary, and that's not the case as I see it here, they have an SSF, administrative expenses are paid by the subsidiary from its own earnings. There's no credit arrangement. There's no refund. There's no subsidization that's keyed to the administrative expenses. As a practical effect, it could well be, though, and we have to recognize, that if you have a subsidiary who's making money and they have expended administrative expenses, that's that much less money that could be paid in dividends to the parent in the other of the foreign company, and that's just the way it works. And so there can be an, in effect, a reduction in money received by the foreign corporation because of the expenditure of SSF administrative expenses by the subsidiary. So I'm unable to adopt that precedent for the future in this particular case. And that's my thought. Commissioner McGann.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that explanation. I think that for those who follow the world of corporate structure, it could be helpful guidance in the future as to your concerns here. My sense is that the funds that are leaving the domestic company, money made here in this, in my view, domestic money and therefore permissible, that doesn't taint what else they want to do, going overseas. In an ordinary case, if that were characterized as a dividend, my sense is that would be okay. But you don't see this as a dividend. This is something different. So, and you know, companies structure themselves for a variety of reasons: tax reasons, international law, trade law. I mean, there are all kinds of reasons why. And my guess is, car manufacturers are not going to start with the Federal Election Campaign Act as their first document when deciding how to set up their corporate structure. It's probably their last thought. But my sense is that for other companies, it's I guess the message is, in this case, this turns on the facts, and there's no new rule being made here. There's no new – it's just factually these cases are always very tough, and this doesn't mean there's any sort of any new law here. This is all – very intensive fact-based AOs. And I think I agree with you. Mr. Barron's presentation was very helpful, and I think it's good to have folks able to talk directly to the commission. But I just wanted to compliment you, Mr. Chairman, on explaining your rationale. I was hopeful that factually there would be an ability to get a yes here, but. Reasonable people can reasonably disagree on when it comes to how one views the application of rules to facts. So, but I'm with the vice chair on that.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. trying not to rehash all the old ground. I do want to make it very, very clear. I think it was clear last time. I want to make it clear again, because I think it's important that I believe there is unanimous agreement that certainly the domestic subsidiary of a foreign company can have an SSF. Nobody is suggesting that has changed. That's been the case for a long time. The sponsors of BICRA made it very clear that they wanted that to continue. The commission made it very clear they understood that when they issued their rulemaking. Nobody is attempting to cut back in any way on that. This particular fact pattern, and again, I like my colleagues, I compliment Mr. Barron for his forthrightness. You know, it says in the question that he posed to us, may the administrative costs of the SSF be paid from the Daimler EAPP budget using cash generated by MBUSA from its U.S. revenues or other domestic sources, notwithstanding MBUSA's accounting and after-the-fact reconciliation for those costs with Daimler AG pursuant to the service SLA, service licensing agreement, service something agreement. I don't have that part of it in front of me. But I think that the question itself recognizes that, you know, there's something about that fact pattern that perhaps is different and unique that might cause somebody to look at this fact pattern and not say this is a slam dunk, you know, based on all the prior precedents, we know what the answer is. I'm sure they were hoping they knew what the answer was, but as I said, I think it is to the requester's credit that they forthrightly acknowledge that there is that little wrinkle here, which three of us view as a subsidy by the foreign parent and three of us don't, and it's unfortunate that we can't agree. But to the extent that in his second comment the requester asked for clarity, I hope that we are being clear about the exact piece of this that we don't agree on and the rest of it that we do. So with that, that's really all I got.
I did notice the comment was in the most recent letter from Mr. Barron, that you moved up, that you did want some factual clarification with respect to whether or not it was really okay for the Mercedes-Benz to pay the administrative expenses of Sterling. as I recall. And maybe we need to give some thought to that as we go forward here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to clarify that request, but in doing so, I also want to point out that with respect to Sterling's board of directors, two of the three directors are not foreign nationals. I didn't understand that you made that request. We're glad to confirm so that you know that with respect to Sterling.
Thank you for the clarification.
One of the directors is a foreign national. Of course, no foreign nationals will participate in the administration of any political action committee. With respect to With respect to your query about our last comment in that was submitted last week, we noted that in the alternative draft on page 10, there was a statement that if MBUSA chooses to use its EAPP cost center to pay these costs, it must be able to demonstrate through a reasonable accounting method that it has made the payments from its own revenues and that MBUSA has sufficient funds in its accounts other than funds given or loaned or reimbursed to Daimler AG from which the payment is made. Now, we're not certain we understood that point. Obviously, we have a company here that generates I guess in 2007 revenues over $22 billion in revenues in North America, over 90% of which is from the United States, and it believes that it would be able to demonstrate through a reasonable accounting method that whatever money is used to defray the administrative expenses are among those other than what may have been accounted for EAPP. So it would be helpful to know if that's what the commissioners who support the alternative draft had in mind, you know, some accounting method to show we make so much money here in the U.S. that it would be beyond whatever was attributable to EAPP and could be used to pay for the administrative expenses.
In other words, I think what you're seeing is an opinion that MBUSA can pay for the administrative expenses of Sterling's SSF. Mm-hmm. But I think the point, and I don't want to be the one to, you know, opine on what the opinion is going to be, but that I think the theory was here that we would not allow those expenses to be credited somehow by the so-called grandparent, by the German Daimler AG, and so they'd have to be straight out of their own money and not reimbursed.
And not be accounted for and credited in any way.
And not be reimbursed.
So it's both. So there doesn't have to be a reasonable accounting method, apparently. I mean, you just have to have internal records that show we made money in the U.S., we used that money to pay for the SSF administrative funds, and there was no accounting at any time thereafter back to Germany.
There was no credit given.
Correct.
This is all new for us here to be talking back and forth on how to interpret our advisory opinion. So we're just treading new ground here a little bit. So I'd ask other commissioners, Commissioner Weintraub, to weigh in.
The facts would be different than the ones that you have presented to us. You know, is there a way that they could organize themselves so that it would be all right? Yes, I think so, but it is not the way it's been presented to us so far, because what three of us are saying, I believe, I don't want to speak for my colleagues, but I think the three of us are on the same page on this, is that the way that you have described it to us so far, where there is a Daimler EAPP receives an annual budget authorization from Daimler AG. Expenses are invoiced to Daimler AG and netted against the monthly payments to reduce them by the amount of the Daimler EAPP expenses. So they end up paying less money over to Germany than they otherwise would have, and it is in that sense that we view, I guess it's Daimler AG, the German parent, as subsidizing the administrative expenses. Mm-hmm. If they are not subsidizing the administrative expenses, if the U.S. subsidiary is not getting a credit against what it would otherwise owe, those would be different facts than what have been presented to us. If you wanted to come back with a separate advisory opinion request saying, okay, this is how we're going to do it now, because we understand that we didn't have four votes for doing it the way we originally presented it, obviously we would be happy to take a look at that. But I don't think that we're in a position right now to opine on anything other than the request that has been presented before us. I mean, it's great that we have you here to clarify questions, but I don't think we can change the answer based on sort of an informal understanding that we have based on a conversation right now today.
We just didn't understand what the phrase MBUSA has sufficient funds in its accounts other than funds given or loaned or reimbursed by Daimler AG from which the payment is made.
Well, it's that reimbursed part that, you know, I think you may be viewing reimbursed in a different way than we're viewing reimbursed. But that's what we encompass by the word reimbursed. Okay? Are we clear now?
Understood.
Okay. Thanks.
At this point, we have a motion on the table.
Mr. Chair, if I could, my thought is, and if the vice chair who made the motion would consider a friendly amendment to adopt, as Commissioner Bowerly noted, there's a lot of agreement here. I think there's four questions, and I think on three of the questions, we're all saying yes. It's question I think three that we have a disagreement to adopt what we can here today and instruct counsel to prepare the standard language in that question that we're unable to issue an opinion as to that part. Instead of having a series of votes, just have one vote on what we agree on and agree to instruct counsel to fill in the gap to put in the standard language. So,
okay, do we have a friendly amendment?
That's a clear enough amendment for my colleagues to the motion.
I consider that a friendly amendment and do not oppose it.
Okay. Is there any question in the council's mind about what the motion is intended to do? Commissioner Weintraub.
I just want to be sure that I'm pretty sure I understand what the motion is. So the motion would be to adopt draft, doesn't have a number, the draft, 09-54, except that in answer to question three, it would say the commission could not agree or whatever our standard boilerplate is on that. Is that what I want to make sure that's the motion.
That's the idea. Now, okay. What I did not do is fly-spec the draft and whether if there's any technical changes between the two, I'm not intentionally, if you've changed any language, I'm not intentionally masking those over, but I think it's all the same language, so.
Commissioner Bowerly?
I believe there's some small additional language at the in the background section in the draft that is not in the alternative draft, but I think we can either, I think it's not, in my view, material either way, so I would be comfortable with leaving it in the draft that we're adopting.
You have an understanding? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. None. The motion passes 6-0. Mr. Barron, thank you once again for an excellent presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And thank you, Mr. Burns, for also being willing to make a presentation.
The next matter is Advisory Opinion 2009-19, Clipper Growth, Inc. Clipper Growth, not Inc. Counsel?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to know that there's a late submitted draft document.
Mr. Chairman, would you like to make a motion?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider agenda document number 09-57-A.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That's 2-0.
Aye.
Aye, sorry.
Oh, I changed it to 6-0. Thank you. You ready, Councilman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you is agenda document number 0957 and agenda document 0957A, which are alternative draft advisory opinions in response to a request from Club for Growth and Club for Growth PAC. The request asks whether Club for Growth and Club for Growth PAC may use contributor information contained in reports filed with the Commission to make one-time communications to contributors to Senator Arlen Specter's 2010 Senate re-election campaign, notifying them that Senator Specter has switched his party affiliation and has publicly offered to refund contributions upon request. There are three alternative drafts. Draft A concludes that Club for Growth and Club for Growth PAC may use the contributor information contained in disclosure reports to make communications with contributors to Senator Specter's campaign. Draft C reaches the same conclusion as Draft A, but contains several revisions to Draft A. Draft B concludes that Club for Growth and Club for Growth PAC may not use contributor information contained in disclosure reports. The Commission received two comments on Drafts A and B. I would be happy to address any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Somebody like to go through some of the changes on Draft C? Any further comment, questions? Ready for a vote? Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am supporting Draft C, which is agenda document number 09-57-A, which would approve the request of the requester. I think that this document most accurately reflects what the statute and the our regulations require and what they prohibit. And I think that as the request is set forward and the stipulations that are made in that request, I believe that it does pass muster under our regs and under our and under the statute. And for that reason, I will be supporting this draft and appreciate the work of others on the commission and especially our staff for some of the drafts that have been circulated and the collaborative effort that's been undertaken over the last several days in order to reach a conclusion on this draft. Thank you.
Commissioner Barley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will also be supporting what has been designated as Draft C, Agenda 0957A. I do share many of the concerns raised by Draft B. When contributors make their contributions to campaigns or other committees above a certain amount, their names become part of that committee's filings and thus a part of the FEC's database available for all the public to see. The disclosure of who is funding campaigns and committees is a core purpose of our mission and I think a centerpiece of the FECA and is very important. And while I recognize the importance of this transparency, I do know that some contributors may view this disclosure as a cost or burden to their own privacy. I therefore take heed of the members of Congress who were concerned when they passed this legislation that the disclosure could open up those contributors to harassment and so added a provision against the use of contributor information for certain purposes. In this case, the requester has offered some explicit affirmations within its request and its subsequent comment about their proposed activity, which assure me that we are dealing with a quite limited request for contacting contributors. Not only does the request explicitly limit the proposed use of the contributor information to the specific communication identified, the comment repeats the requester will engage in one contact and has no interest in making repeated communications and will not do so. Here, rather than communications targeting the recipient and which are intended to harass or intimidate, the communications appear to be purely campaign-related. And that's a phrase I think was first used by one of our predecessors, Commissioner Thomas, in describing another matter. So I do while I do think the harassment concern is maybe presented by some broad use of our contributor information, I don't believe that it is raised here. The facts of this request do not raise concerns that were presented in facts at issue in a recent matter under review that we issued a statement, a couple of my colleagues and I issued a statement. In that matter, 6096, we were considering communications that targeted individual contributors with a letter that stated the sender would engage in ongoing surveillance of the recipient's contributions and contained veiled threats of legal exposure. The content of that letter was troubling, and I, along with my colleagues, Commissioners Weintraub and Walther, voted to open a limited investigation to determine whether, in fact, the sender had used contributor information from FEC filings. So while I do believe there are appropriate limitations in some circumstances, particularly with respect to harassing contributors based on their public participation, I believe in this particular request, the limited nature of the contacts, along with the campaign-related purpose of those contacts, allows me to support Draft C. Thank you.
Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the changes that were made in coming up with Draft C, and I think that they've made it a better document and a document that I feel a little bit better about because it is going to be, you're okay, Mr. Keating. That's the one that's going to win. I'm not going to vote for it, but I'm going to lose. I feel a little better about, despite the fact that I'm not going to vote for it, I feel a little bit better about it based on the changes that were made. Had there been, amongst the helpful comments, Mr. Keating has pointed out there may have been some miscommunication that was reflected in Draft B, and I would correct that if there were any point to it, but since it's not going to win, there's not, and I'm not going to bother to even move its approval since the other one has four votes, so I won't bother to correct the record in Draft B. The reason that I'm not going to support Draft C is I kind of like to cut to the chase of what's going on here. And what's going on here is that an organization that is allied with a political opponent is going to write to the donors using our database, write to the donors of a candidate and say, he's not the guy you thought he was when you sent him your money, so you should ask for your money back. Now, in this case, it's a particularly compelling fact pattern because he has switched parties and offered to give the money back to anybody who asked for it. But it seems to me that this is a very short step from a lot of situations that could come up where somebody, a political opponent, could write to the donors and say, hey, you didn't know when you sent money to this guy in the first place that he was going to support abortion or oppose abortion or support the war or oppose the war or support gun rights or oppose gun rights. Whatever your hot button issue is, and there are plenty of them out there, I think that mischief could be caused and harassment could occur. I appreciate that this opinion tries to sort of cabin in what can go on under its purview, but I think we are very close to a situation that I believe that most members of Congress would view as harassment of donors. They were worried about harassment of donors about money, not in general, and that's why I think in many ways this presents a stronger case than the tobacco-free kids request several years ago, because there they wanted to talk to donors about issues. Here, the request is we want to talk to donors specifically about money, and it seems to me that that is what members of Congress were concerned about. They didn't want their donors harassed because they didn't want people to feel like it wasn't worthwhile to make a donation because they were going to get harassed at the end. And as I said, I've known members of Congress, and I strongly suspect that they would view this as harassment of donors. So I'm hoping that we're not going to go very far down the road beyond this AO, but I am troubled by what the Pandora's box that we might be opening up here. So I'm not able to support the draft, although, as I said, I appreciate the work that went into it and the accommodations that were made to make it a better document. And I also appreciate the comments particularly appreciated the learned commentary that was provided by our old friend Mike Bays. Nice research there. Nice job. And nice to see you here again. But I am not going to be able to support Draft C. Thank you.
Further comment? Commissioner McGann.
Just briefly. Just in my view, I don't think we're creating anything new here or opening up new avenues. I think it's a well-established rule. Where it crosses from issue discussion, campaign discussion, and the like into harassment is not an issue that we have to decide here today. That line may get blurry in certain cases. It may be quite clear in other cases, but I don't think we're addressing that. I agree with Commissioner Bowerly that there is that line, this matter doesn't cross it. In fact, going back in advisory opinions and the draft C cites an advisory opinion from 1981 that allowed a candidate using information from disclosure reports to mail letters to his opponent, correcting what he thought was false information being spread by the opponent. So when it comes to debating what's going on in the campaign, that's not harassment. That's just what happens in politics. So I think this is a clear case, and I've said it before, but it's probably the first time since I've joined the commission. I agree with former Chairman Thomas on this, that when it's campaign related, that's part of what you sign up for when you're in the public eye. Contributors don't sign up for harassment, however. They're not the ones on the ballot, so there is a balancing that needs to go on there. But I think this draft appropriate, and I think in the correct case we'll maintain the balance in favor of avoiding contributor harassment, because they have a constitutional right to give, and you don't want to chill that by having people beat them up unnecessarily on things that are not related to the campaign. If you give to a campaign, you don't want to start receiving a bunch of spam mail for ShamWows or whatnot. Not to pick on ShamWow, I have no reason to think they do that. I just saw the commercial as I was leaving to come to work this morning. So that's all I have, Mr. Chair, but I agree with Commissioner Bowerly, and I think this is wholly consistent with what the commission's done over the years.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other comments? For myself, I aligned myself with the Commissioner Weintraub on this matter for the same reasons. Some people are more sensitive than others about whether they get calls at home at night. Get letters. They don't like to get calls at home. They don't like to get letters. They consider that intrusion a type of harassment. I don't particularly like to see that myself. And so I feel that this is lending itself toward that kind of conduct. In that particular case, we allowed this Club for Growth, our opinion, to engage in this kind of conduct or contact. But when somebody reads this, they can say, hey, I can do that too. So then you have the next organization that's making the same calls using the same information, all from the list of the campaign contributor, and you run into a situation where we open the floodgates for other entities. Even if Club for Growth makes one call, other entities can make the second call, another one can make a third call, another one can make a fourth call, because we don't limit it to only one organization can only make one call. So in theory, this could happen to the point where, for me, one is a lot, but for two and for three, that opportunity is available just to say, hey, this guy is a different person now, or sees it a different way, or has changed his political views. Do you really want to align yourself with him? If not, you can give your money back. I think the message would be maybe more subtle than that, but the bottom line is it says, this gentleman has offered to give the money back. If you haven't gotten it back yet, here's your opportunity. We'll help you. Would you like us to call you again? And the next thing you know, you develop a cadre of people who are dissatisfied with the change of position. Maybe begin to align them with your own or get their consent to be on their own list for other contributions. In that particular case, I think that we're going farther than I'm willing to go on this. I would point out, too, that the one case, the National Center for Tobacco-Free Kids, made the point that there is, if there's a possibility of repetition, repetitive and intrusive communications to contributors, that was a factor that was important in that particular case, and I see that as certainly a possibility in this particular case as well. So I think if we're ready for a vote. Commissioner Weintraub.
I just wanted to make one more point, Mr. Chairman, because I think perhaps our overall concerns are similar, but our specific concerns may be a little bit different, and I want to be it's important to me, even though I'm not voting for this, that there are limitations in this AO. It only permits the conduct that was asked about, which is one contact. So if anybody were out there and were reading this and thought, oh, this means I can make 5 phone calls based because they just issued this AO, they would not be on good ground, because that is not what this AO says. This AO is, you know, even though I'm not supporting it, what it's going to allow is one contact, period. So anything more than that would be out of bounds, I think, or at least in unclear territory.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe Draft C was carefully crafted to avoid sending out any sorts of winks and nods or smoke signals that behavior that goes beyond what the requester indicated was going to take place. I don't think that this gives any comfort to those who think that they could go well beyond the request here. I think that we were given a specific request. The facts were stated in a particular way. We're giving an answer, assuming that those facts are indeed correct. And as with any advisory opinion, the opinion only extends as far as the facts as being represented by the requester are accurate. And if it turns out that they aren't, then the protection will not extend to reach conduct that is outside the bounds of the facts as were represented by the requester. So I think this was a very carefully considered and carefully drafted opinion to not give comfort to those who may want to engage in some of the more alarming scenarios that were that are the concern of the chairman, and I think would be the concern of really everyone. So having said that, I'd be happy to make a motion on Draft C, which is agenda document number 09-57-A, and move that we approve that draft.
Yeah. Let me just clarify something. I got the impression that people thought that I meant Club for Growth could make more than one call. I don't see that as the issue. It's just that Club for Growth can make one call, and there's another organization that sees Club for Growth can make one call, and then they decide to make one call too. So it hasn't and there's no way we can prevent that from happening by the issuance of this opinion. I think that was one of the clarifications that I meant to make. But I'm prepared to vote. This point, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. All in favor? I voted against, along with Commissioner Weintraub. It's 4-2. We'll take a recess for 5 minutes. We're ready to resume now. We'll begin with AO 290020, Visklosky. Mr. Vice Chairman, do you have a motion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider agenda document number 09-58-A.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Council, we're ready to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, commissioners. Before you is agenda document number 09-58, which is a draft advisory opinion in response to a request from Visklosky for Congress. The request asks whether Visklosky for Congress may use campaign funds to pay legal fees and expenses incurred by current and former congressional office staff of Representative Visklosky in connection with an ongoing federal investigation into activities of Representative Visklosky. This advisory opinion request presents the same facts as those in Advisory Opinion 2009-10. In that advisory opinion, the Commission concluded that Visklosky for Congress may use campaign funds to pay legal fees and expenses incurred by Representative Visklosky in connection with a federal investigation into alleged improper political contributions to Representative Visklosky and appropriations earmarks purportedly obtained by Representative Visklosky. Recently, as part of the ongoing federal investigation, Representative Visklosky's former chief of staff was served with a grand jury subpoena to produce documents. The draft before you concludes that Visklosky for Congress may use all campaign funds to pay legal fees and expenses incurred by Representative Visklosky's current and former congressional staff in connection with this federal investigation because the allegations relate to Representative Visklosky's campaign or duties as a federal office holder or both, and the legal fees and expenses would not exist irrespective of Representative Visklosky's campaign or duties as a federal office holder. We note also that an alternative draft B was made public this morning in agenda document 09-58A. It reaches the opposite conclusion. I will be happy to address any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Awesome. I'd like to just begin. I asked for the filing going blue of draft B this morning. And I apologize for not getting it out sooner, but given everything else that was going on, I just didn't have a chance to kind of finish it off. I went the other direction on this, and my main concern here is we're looking now at providing legal expenses to somebody other than expenses personally incurred by the candidate or the candidate committee. And in this particular case, we're asked to provide for reimbursement for expenses in connection with a subpoena of documents of a former employee. And in that particular case, the former employee, maybe coincidentally, maybe not, is also a former employee of the principal donor that's under investigation. And that deployment relationship occurred after leaving the office of Representative Visklosky. We don't know anything about the documents being subpoenaed. We don't know anything about the reason why they're being subpoenaed. That's not been offered to the commission. And from all the facts before us, the chief of staff is a former employee of both of the entities under investigation, both the Representative Visklosky, as well as PMA Group. But the most recent relationship was with PMA Group. And some of the major contributions which appear to have occurred based upon the records available to us seem to show the gravamen of the wrong most likely occurred during the period he was an employee of PMA Group. From my perspective, then, it really isn't that easy for me to conclude that these expenses would not have been incurred irrespective of his relationship with Representative Visklosky, but in fact, to me, seem more likely to have been occurred in connection with his relationship with PMA Group. So alternate B makes that point. I recognize the votes aren't there, but I did want to have that point made. Any further comment? Ready for a motion? Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we approve draft of advisory opinion 2009-20 as set forth in agenda document number 09-58.
Further comment? Mr. Barley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will support that motion, and just a brief comment as to my rationale why I think this is the right answer in this case. I think that the request asks whether the campaign may also cover the cost of certain persons who will need to respond to the federal investigation as a result of their employment relationship with Representative Osgloski. And for the reasons we stated in the previous advisory opinion, this investigation seems to be centered clearly around official duties or related to the campaign in a way that I think is more clearly presented than in some of the other AOs we've dealt with on that topic this year. So I think that it would be unfortunate if we limited it only to the office holder and never allowed employees who are clearly involved in the official duties at question in an investigation like this. Of course, all of these are just allegations at this point in time. So we don't know, you know, there's no conclusion reached, but I think that the federal investigation is clearly focused on official duties, and so I'm comfortable with the conclusion reached in the A-draft or the agenda document 0958.
Thank you, Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with the comments of Commissioner Bowerly. But I do want to note, Mr. Chairman, you do raise a good point in your alternative draft. But the issue before us is whether the use of campaign funds is personal use. And I agree with Commissioner Bowerly that in this case the answer is yes. And I think that's all that's before us. But sorry?
Not personal
use. Sorry. Thank you.
I thought you were talking about my draft.
I misspoke. Sometimes I do that. But yes, you can use campaign funds. It's not personal use. Thank you. Yeah. And these are just allegations, and that's really the only question before us. Now, could someday in a different case or this case, and without speculating about this case, have someone in a situation where a lawyer may have to think through who's actually paying the fee and who's the client? And potential conflicts and all that, certainly. And I think the chairman, his instincts are very sound in that respect. But I'm not sure that's really our I think it's not our job to decide that sort of thing. There could be further analysis here. And it's just not the sort of thing the FEC concerns itself with. The chairman does raise a concern. It's just not a concern that I think is a concern the commission can address, but I agree in spirit, but I just legally think that's just a different case.
Thank you, Mr. Former Chairman. Anything further, Commissioner Weintraub?
I agree that it's not our problem to solve, although I believe that the duty runs from the lawyer to the client, not to the bill payer. I think the bill payer is I seem to recall looking into this back in the day when I was wearing my ethics hat, and this has come up in the ethics context, and I think that the and was resolved in a similar way. You know, sometimes staff people get drawn in, and I guess several of us remember what it was like to be a staff person, I remember dealing with a lot of staff people when I was – not only was I a staff person, but when I was on the Hill, I dealt with a lot of staff people around ethics issues. And the boss is usually the big target. They're the ones that the prosecutors want, but staff get drawn in because of their relationship and perhaps of their knowledge. And I think that especially with the case of current staff, people who are current staff employees, that can leave them in a very – difficult position because they're usually, you know, not people who have huge resources, and they're not people that, members can set up legal expense funds, staff people can and have, but they don't, their legal expense funds usually don't get as much money as the members' legal expense funds. So I think it's this situation, I'm not sure whether it's come before the commission before, but it's certainly come up before, and I believe it's come up before the ethics committees, and was resolved in a similar fashion. I think this is the right result, and I will support the motion.
Any further comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'm opposed. Motion is 5-1. The next matter is West Virginia Secretary of State, Advisory Opinion 00-2009-21, Agenda Document 09-59. I'd like to make mention of the fact that we have Alex Dasanovich with us, who is our intern for the summer, who will be making the presentation for us. And I did notify him we have one late submitted document. But then after his face turned white, I told him it was just a joke. But Mr. Stefanovich, welcome. It's great to have you here. I hope you enjoyed the summer. I know you're leaving for Yale in about a week, something like that.
Yes.
Right. Did you enjoy it here?
Yes. It was a lot of fun.
Please proceed. Pass that test.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Commissioners. Agenda Document 09-21 responds to an advisory opinion request submitted by counsel for the West Virginia Secretary of State. The requester asks whether a state law that regulates certain kinds of polling expenses, including polling expenses by federal candidates' authorized committees, is preempted by the Federal Election Campaign Act or commission regulations. The draft before you concludes that West Virginia's law regulating polling expenses is preempted insofar as it purports to apply to federal candidates and their principal campaign committees. We received no comments on the draft. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions, comments? Commissioner Weintraub.
Not a question, Mr. Chairman, but a comment. I believe this is the right result. I think this is the only possible result. I asked my staff to double check on this because I am not a fan of push polls, and I would not want to interfere with anybody who was trying to limit them, except that I do believe that there just is no way to get to another legal answer than the one we're giving today. So I somewhat regretfully support the draft.
Thank you. Any further comment? Someone like to make a motion? Mr. Vice Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we approve draft advisory opinion 2009-21 as set forth in an agenda document number 09-59.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0. Congratulations. Especially when you consider the way other things went today. The other two matters on the agenda, there was one on the agenda for consideration of placing pleadings on our website. That will be continued to the next meeting. And there was another matter on the agenda with respect to calendaring, and I think we'll take that up by a tally vote after the meeting. I believe there's no further business. Is there any further matter to come before us? If not, the meeting is adjourned.